Father, just over these couple of days, we pray that there would be seeds of ideas, conversations that just trigger things in our hearts, ideas that just connect with us, attitudes that rub off on us, whispers from heaven that inspire us, confidences that arise in us, Lord, that we would go and be the difference, and that God would just meet with us in this space. So this morning, what does a transformed community actually look like? And why would this really matter to us anyway? And I think it matters to us because I think it actually mattered to Jesus. And if you look at Mark chapter 1, we discover that on Jesus' first recorded day of ministry, in Mark chapter 1 and verse 21 through to 34, we remember that Jesus started that day in the synagogue with his disciples, and they had an impact in that place. He spoke with authority, and remember there was that demon-possessed chap that came at the back and caused a commotion. And Jesus, you know, said, "Who do you think you are interfering with us?" And Jesus called silence. And then people at the end of the service were like, "Oh my goodness, who is this?" But you see, Jesus didn't just stop in the sacred place of the temple. Where did they go next? They were hungry, so they went up the street to Peter's house. And we see that not only did Jesus touch the temple space, but he began to engage in the home. And do you remember there was a hold up on lunch because Peter's mother-in-law was ill. And so Jesus thought, sort the cook. Let's just pray for her. And what does she do? She gets up and she cooks them. And oh my goodness, was it a good lunch. And they had such a great afternoon together. But the word had got out beyond the temple, beyond the home. And then in the evening, the whole village was coming out as Capernaum, and they all started crowding out, and they brought the sick and the lame, and there was a healing impact in this village. And can you imagine at the end of the evening what it looked like? There were probably stretchers left at the door. There were crutches and sticks left. There was just carnage outside the house because something had happened. They didn't need their stretchers anymore. They didn't need their sticks. And they had gone home. And the impact in that little village was incredible in one day. And see, this is why community matters to us, because it mattered to Jesus. He wasn't just interested about what happens within the church. He's interested in what happens in our homes. He's interested in what happens in our village. And he's passionate about seeing the gospel impacting lives. And so today and this week, we're thinking, or these couple of days, we're thinking about what does transformation look like? And I just love to be able to invite three friends of mine who are going to tell us three different stories from here in Huntingdon, here in Cambridge, and here a bit in Cambridge and a bit in Huntingdon as well. Three friends, my friend Ian, my friend Maria, and my friend Kevin. And we want to thank you all for taking time to be with us today and to hanging out with us. And how can we be part? I mean, the question that I've asked these guys to share with us about some of their stories is to help inspire us, just like Linda's began to inspire us, to think about how can we be part of changing lives and serving our communities where we are. And I've given each of them 13 minutes to share a bit of their story, because I figured that 3 minutes that you get after the 10 minutes is the moment that God shows up. So it's going to be key. So sleep in the first 10. Yeah, well, they're human and they need warming up. So, you know. So I want us to hear about three inspiring stories that will help us evaluate and will help us target needs, and how do we approach, how do we start thinking about the community where we are. What I love about what Linda was sharing was, did you hear how many times in her story with us she talked about, and then I was thinking, and then I was reflecting, and just that observing of, hang on, I'm dealing with this, but hang on, but what about that? And there's a lovely progression. So, without further ado, I'd love to invite my very good friend Ian, Ian Rawley, who is a magistrate. He is also a pastor, and he is also a global trotting Bible teacher and a global influencer from another network in our country called LifeLink Global. And Ian, I'd love you to come and share with us this morning. Real privilege to have you with us. Thank you.
Thank you. Do I use this one?
Yes, great.
Thank you. Well, it's lovely to meet some familiar faces again. And faces I haven't seen for a long time, Simon. And Julia, lovely to see you. Yes, so Tim and I reconnected, having worked quite closely together in the 90s, probably about 2 years ago. And a friendship's part of this story, actually, because Tim's been very helpful in what I'm about to share. So when he approached me, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks back, and said, would you like to take a part of this session and share the journey you went on to reorientate the church to the new area of Eddington, I said, yeah, that would be great. Thank you very much, Tim. Privilege. He said he got 13 minutes for a two-year story. So I thought, well, that's I'm going to need a miracle. However, having got here today, I'm so drugged up with cold and flu medicine that the miracle will be I can actually stand up for 13 minutes. Anyway, in a nutshell, what we've done as a church, New Life Church Cambridge, we've gone on a journey over these last couple of years, and we have completely replanted the church. When I say that, we haven't plucked out people from the homes they live in, but we've reorientated their vision to a whole new area of Cambridge. And this is a picture of Eddington. There's a different but sort of equivalent development on the other side of Huntingdon Road in northwest Cambridge called Darwin Green. And together, these will, within the next 10 years, represent a community together with part of Huntingdon Road and Girton with up to 20,000 people. But these two developments, Eddington and Darwin Green, are completely new. It was just farmland. So that's what we've been doing, and I'm going to try and very quickly tell you a little bit about the story of why we're doing it, which is all about trying to follow what we thought God was saying. So the first question I want to try and answer very briefly is, how does the church begin to get involved? So I don't know all your areas, but certainly in this part of the world, it's just endless building, isn't it? Building, building, building. They're always trying to build new communities. I think RAF Brampton, just up the road, is going to be given over to new building. We've got Water Beach Barracks at North Stowe. They just can't build enough homes, it seems. And yet, it's a truism, but it's true, building houses doesn't build community. And it's absolutely true, isn't it? Because if you go into so many of these new developments, what you find is a sense of lostness and soullessness, and there's no sort of shared history, there are no roots that people have put down over generations, and it can be a very isolating sort of experience for people. So for 14 years at the time, we had been working in the twin villages of Histon and Impington, about 10,000 people, just across the boundary from the city, across the A14. And God had really blessed us. We'd had a great time, with many, many reasons to thank God. But about 2.5 years ago, Carol, my wife, and I began to feel dissatisfied, just a sense that I don't know if maybe our time is up. So this whole journey started with that dissatisfaction. And I think sometimes that's how God gets us moving. It's with a sense of dissatisfaction. It's not that there's anything particularly wrong in what we're doing. It's just, it's no longer satisfying. It doesn't, the soul doesn't feel well. It's like, Lord, I think there's something more. And the reason we felt that was because we really felt that our commission was coming to an end. We had done many great things. We had lots of successes. But at that point, there were six churches working very well together, great relationship amongst the six of us. And almost every area of village life was covered in some way by Christians. So you had Christians running toddler groups, Christians at one end, Christians visiting elderly housebound at the other, you had Christians attached to the GP surgery. You know, praise God, Christians were everywhere, which is wonderful. But we just kind of thought, well, are we really needed? The people who are here and really don't have a vision to be anywhere else, and that's right, they probably shouldn't have a vision to be anywhere else, they've got it all covered. And we've helped to galvanize some things, and we've joined in with some things, but we just felt, you know, I think, Lord, there's maybe regions beyond, from that, you know, that phrase from the Apostle Paul. And independently, Carol and I were reading the Bible, and both of us, at different times, within a space of about 2 months, read a parable that Jesus told. As Luke tells it, goes something like this, that a man had a big dinner party, and he sent out invitations, and then he got all these ridiculous excuses why people didn't want to come. In modern parlance, it would be like, I've just bought a house, and I've got to go and look at it, and I've bought a car, and I need to go and check it out, and I've got myself a wife, so I can't come. And, of course, the significance of that parable is that what they were turning down was the second final reminder. So they already knew for a long time this was going to be a big event. They got the save the date notification, but they all sent these excuses at the end. And we just felt, you know what, in many ways, that's what it feels like to us with this community. If anyone wants to do anything Christian in this community, they've already had the invitations. Those who are turning up have turned up. And we're sort of replowing the same ground again and again and again. And I just got itchy feet. But I think it was a holy dissatisfaction. I thought there were regions beyond who need to hear the gospel. About the same time, one of the other leaders in our church came to us and said, I've just been praying and I don't know if it means anything, but I just feel the Lord spoken to me through a parable. And I said, well, it's interesting. Which parable was that? She said, well, it's the one about the big dinner. I don't know if you've read it recently. I said, well, it's interesting. Keep talking. You can imagine how excited we were. And then a number of months after that, we were at our church weekend away, and someone who was not part of the church who was ministering that weekend said they really felt they had a prophetic input for the church, which was God wanted us to move out of our comfort zone. So all these things, you see, were lining up. And so it was a kind of a push-pull process to answer this first question. How did we get involved? We got involved because we began to feel a holy dissatisfaction. The Holy Spirit started speaking to us, confirming that it wasn't just us going through a midlife crisis or something. You know, it was actually of him. And then our attention started to be drawn to these amazing new developments that are being built right now as I speak. So, of course, that was a big, big adjustment to the church. So we needed to take the church on that journey with us. And, of course, there was a long process of sharing with the leadership, then sharing with the people. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. But having got that process done and got the people's buy-in, we then started thinking about the second question, what is the attitude and approach we should take in going into a new area? And what we felt very strongly was the need for humility, the need to listen, and the need to have serving hearts. So we didn't want to ever give the impression that we had come to this new area to do church to them, but to really learn how to be Jesus amongst them. Because actually, there was no vibrant Christian presence at all in that whole area. There is an old Anglican church. There's a small Baptist church at the far end of the Girton village. I haven't got a map, so I can't really explain, but it's quite away from these developments. And then this area is technically within an Anglican parish, the parish church of which sits in the city. And so this was just a field for centuries. It was just a field. So there was nothing. So there was this huge new build going on and no representation of Jesus in it. So through a series of divine appointments, we met some people who were from the city council doing community development work. And we started talking to them. And we started talking to people, and we listened a lot. And what we found was there was a tremendous sense of loneliness and isolation. I haven't got time, I'm afraid, to explain why. It's more than just what I've sort of said in summary, but there were some very specific reasons why, in Edington in particular, there's a great deal of isolation. Because I'll just say this, one of the exciting things about Edington is there are 52 nations represented in Edington. And a lot of the people who live in Edington are connected with the university in some way on short-term contracts from different parts of the world. And so you can accentuate by a factor of 10 the series of isolation, and you don't know people because you come from a different culture and you don't even maybe speak the language. Maybe your partner does, but you don't. And typically they'll have young children, so they're kind of stuck in a tiny flat that's, yes, super-duper, eco-friendly, can heat it in the winter with a candle, but, you know, you don't know anything about the people around you, so very lonely. So we thought, okay, that's the need that's being perceived. Then we thought, well what should we do about it? That was the third thing, but just quickly to finish off the second, we also realized we needed a long-term commitment, because you build trust slowly. And so, you know, we were very honest with the church that, you know, we were just about to got started in 5 years. And after 10, we'll probably be looking to some significant harvest. Now, I don't mean that we won't be seeing God move at any point before then, but, you know, this is a mindset that we have to have. And I said to the guys, look, this is probably, you know, I'm 63 in a few weeks. This is probably my last big push. You know, I'm very grateful for the many things God's helped me to do, but I'm giving this last phase of my sort of active ministry, I'm all in, and 100%. I could cruise to retirement, but I'm all in 100%. I love what Simon's saying about going up to Scotland, and God opens a whole new thing for him, you know, because there's fire in his belly, and, you know, that's true of all of us, isn't it? We don't want just to fizzle out, we want to really give our energy to whatever the Lord wants right to the very end. So that third question, how did we identify where to engage and what we've begun to do? So we had identified the need. Then we thought a lot about our strengths. And it suddenly occurred to us that actually one of our strengths, and we know this, it's not bragging because it's what's come up again and again and again, from people who visited us, you know, there are things we don't do terribly well, but one thing we really do have as a strength, and we always have had, is an ability and a grace upon us to build community, to build a healing community, to give people a sense of family. And we thought, oh, that's interesting, Lord. What they need is a sense of community, and what we think we can offer is a sense of community. So you don't need to mention Jesus. You don't need to talk about, you know, the four spiritual laws, but you go in on that basis. So what we started doing, and we've now done for over a year, is we've staffed a free community cafe every Monday. And it's been an absolute whopping success. There we go. Eddie's, obviously a play on the name Eddington. But what we have done is connect with people in a very relaxed way. But for many of the people that come, and it's anything between about 30 and 50 people every week now, for them, and they have said this to me personally, this is the highlight of my week. It really is the highlight. And we just love on them. It's all homemade cake that we give, because, you know, we have a big Tesco's as part of this development. A big Sainsbury's. It would be easy just to go to Sainsbury's and buy in bulk whatever we need, but we wanted to show them that we cared about them enough, that all the women, you know, the church, not all, but many of them, yeah, and men. Yes, Josh, my son Josh does a great deal in flapjacks when he's back from the army. So a French lady wanted the recipe. She said she's almost, you know, berating me for this recipe because she's never had flapjacks so wonderful in her whole life. Never heard of flapjacks in France. So she wanted a recipe. So I said, well, I'm terribly sorry. My son's in the army. He cooked them when he was back for the weekend, but he's in Cyprus at the moment. But I'll WhatsApp him. So I've got a little WhatsApp conversation going with this French lady to get the amazing recipe. But it's just about showing you care. You know, it's just making that little extra effort. So finally, what has materialized so far? We just passed the 1 year birthday of Eddie's Cafe. And it's interesting, people who had moved away came back for the birthday. We had no idea they were going to do that, but one or two had moved away to other parts of the city, and one lady brought all the people from her, I think it was her Keep Fit class or something, to show them Eddie's Cafe. There you go. But what that has done crucially is it's given us an in to people who would have been quite suspicious about church. Because it's not been easy. I won't pretend it's been easy. There have been lots of challenges. There was a definite sense among certain stakeholders of, why are you messing up our beautiful new development? We've got, you know, all these amazing ideas for how to build a community for the 21st century. We don't need the myth makers from the Middle Ages to come and spoil it. And so there was a definite sense in some quarters of not feeling very welcome, and it's taken us a long time to sort of break those walls down, just keep loving on people and to find premises to rent and so on. But one of the things that has really, really helped us find that in is if I say I'm the pastor in New Life Church, they say, oh yes, and like, New Life, what's that? If I say, I'm the pastor of the church that runs the cafe, oh, the cafe, oh right, come on in, you know, what do you need? And so that's been fantastic. So we started the cafe a year ago. We started meetings in a not very satisfactory place, which we did once a month. But we really wanted to get into the school. And that is right in the heart of the community. Long story short, and I'm sorry, Tim, I'll wrap up quickly. We've got in there, which is a miracle. It's an absolute miracle. Absolute miracle. And what has happened so far is not just those staging posts that I can point to, but I would say a shift of the atmosphere. I've been going along for 15 or 16 months now to bi-monthly, as a Northwest Cambridge Community Development Wellbeing Committee, or something like that. It's all the stakeholders, whether it's the nursery school, the school, it's the university, welfare, it's everybody, community workers, the Stories Field Centre, who has any kind of stake in wellbeing in that area. And at the beginning, I think we were invited to the table because they thought we probably ought to be invited. But now we're seen as friends and core partners. And in fact, at the meeting last week, one of the community development workers, who's become a good friend, said to the meeting, you know, that we could not deliver what we're delivering without the church. So, in summary, what do you need to think about? I've got seven things. I'm just going to literally read them. Number one, listen to the Holy Spirit. Two, do some careful research, including three, listen to the people on the ground. Four, bring the church with you in the vision. And five, and in the detailed planning. Six, be prepared for hard work. Seven, never stop praying. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Very good, Ian. Very helpful. And what Ian hasn't said, that, you know, we are sharing the faith with people from China, from different areas of the world that have never heard about Jesus before. And the nations are coming to us, and we can engage. And that's what. But the last thing I want to look at is, what does it look like when the kingdom goes beyond our normal bounds of church and it begins to engage with addiction and the community. And you've heard about brothers in arms. This morning we're brothers in stripes. Kevin, my very good friend. We always text when we're going public together. What's the jumper style today? And Kevin is, I met Kevin here in HCC and we pioneered in Cambridge together and is an extraordinary friend. Our families are very knit together. And Kevin's going to share us a bit of his journey and story over the last couple of years and how God's just using him in a whole new world, which is often silent and hidden under the surface, but God's using him in profound ways. Thank you.
Right, 13 minutes and go. So I first came to England in the U.S. military, and I'd just become a Christian before coming over. And so I knew I needed to find a church because I was going to be here for 3 whole years. So I found a church called Huntingdonshire Community Church and got well stuck in and really, really grabbed hold of the kingdom of God and the gospel and just loved learning and growing. My plan was to go back to America and finish my degree, maybe get a master's degree, maybe become a counselor or therapist. I wasn't quite sure, but I had a rough idea. But this church was so amazing. I felt so believed in, and I felt it was such a safe, trusting place that I thought, if I go back to America, I might not find a place that's this good. I might not be given a chance to have a go. And I hadn't actually even done anything huge, but I just somehow knew that this was a place that would trust me, that would give me a go, that I could try to do something. So I scrapped my plans and I settled in here. I moved to Cambridge to help Tim plant City Life Church and spent many years grappling with church and with students and raising my family and everything. Always a volunteer in church. I've come to these Plumline conferences for several decades and I've always been one of the volunteers, you know, not one of the full-time minister folks, to, you know, using my holiday to come to these things. And I loved serving in church, but there was a time when I was making a poster to put up to let people know where our church meetings were about some of the things that we were doing. So we had a guest speaker coming who's a woman whose son had died, and so I wanted to advertise that someone was going to come who had had a serious bereavement, come and listen to this person talk, and I wanted to be able to reach people more than just people who wanted to come and sing songs to God, more than people who just understood the gospel or who was aware of their spiritual side. You know, I wanted to reach out to more people. And as I was doing that poster, I was thinking, what about the other posters that we put up? What about the other advertisements? Who do I have a heart to reach? And it was really difficult because what everybody in the church had in common was interest in God and wanting to make time to love God. But I was feeling a dissatisfaction. I was feeling something in me that I wanted to connect with some other people besides the people who knew that they needed God or the people who knew that they wanted to make church a commitment. So it was really interesting when when it was time for me to finish working in IT, I decided I wanted to work in the caring world. And about the same time, CLC, the church that Tim and I started, came to the end of our time. So So it was time for me to find something new to do because CLC was my whole life. CLC was everything, you know, other than my family. It's the thing that I lived for. But interestingly, there was another track that had been running all this time. So all the time that I'd been in HCC, that I'd came with Tim to start CLC, there was something else that was running parallel to that. And I've always struggled with how to talk about it with people. But let me start by saying, does anybody know an alcoholic? Does anybody have an alcoholic who they know? Does anybody have someone who's addicted to something other than alcohol? Maybe a drug, maybe gambling. That's a lot of people. Well, when I first came to Cambridge with Tim, we were praying together and we were talking together. And I remember meeting up with him once in a pub. And I thought, and I said, Tim, I need to let you know. I need to be honest with you. I need to tell you that I struggle with pornography. I try to pray and I try to do everything that I can find to do about it, and I'm still struggling, and I need to let you know that. And Tim was great. He wasn't shocked, and he didn't freak out, and he didn't say, "Well, in that case, I need to put you over here. You can't get involved. You can't lead." He believed in me and he supported me and kept the door open for me to keep serving. So I've spent, ever since I was a teenager, I've always tried to overcome my problem with pornography. I've read about it, I've listened to podcasts about it, I've studied about it, I've had counseling that has helped, but I've never really been able to sort it. And of course, people who don't understand things like sex addiction or pornography, it's not because there's something wrong at home. It's not because I'm just not satisfied. It's a different problem. And actually, addiction is one thing, and whether addiction manifests as alcohol, whether it manifests as drugs, or whether it manifests as gambling, or whether it manifests as pornography, it's really still the same thing. So my pornography addiction is not really about porn, really. It's about isolation. It's about feeling like I'm alone or feeling like I'm not good enough. That's what the addiction is trying to deal with. So all the years that I was working, serving CLC, and me and Lucy were doing what we could to help out with City Life Church, and we were loving it. I was on the side as well. I was struggling and I was grappling with this. There was a time when I got busted at work for looking at porn on the computer at work, and I got hauled into to my manager's office, and I was told in no uncertain terms that I've broken the rules and I could be fired. That was a time when I called on Nigel Double, if any of you guys know, and got some support from him and things. So it's been a long going journey, and I thought today would be a time when I would like to admit it and be honest about it, because even though it's a bit sensitive talking about sexual things, and it's a little bit awkward and it could be embarrassing, I thought it's more important to bring it out into the open and to disband a little bit of the shame, and it's more important to disband a bit of the stigma than it is to worry about hurting you guys' feelings. I think you guys can handle it. You'll be okay. So 5 minutes, 27 seconds left. So the job that I got was working in drug and alcohol addiction recovery. I went to volunteer at the drug and alcohol services because I'm passionate about addiction recovery and I love being able to talk to people about it, and I would love to be able to help people. And so I started volunteering there, and about 6 months later, I got a job. Now my job is going around the community, all of Cambridgeshire. I travel around Cambridgeshire and I meet people who are struggling with drug or alcohol addiction, and I talk to them, and I listen to them, and I find out how it's going for them. And then the commissioners who commission the drug and alcohol services all across the county and the mental health services, they say to me every 3 months, "How's it going? What are people saying? What's going on?" So I have the ear of the commissioners who are spending all those millions of pounds to try to help people with addiction. And I have their number. And we were going to our son's graduation yesterday, and the phone rang, and it was one of the commissioners ringing me because there's a meeting coming up, and he wants me to fill him in what's going on. It's brilliant. It's so, talk about influence. It's such a cool opportunity to be talking to the powerless and the poorest and the most sidelined in our society, and to listen to them and to value them and to respect them and to tell and to communicate to them that they are important and they are loved. All of the gospel stuff that we know, I can do all that without words. And I get to talk to people of great influence in the county. It's brilliant. It's really cool. So this is my, I just had this in my coat pocket. This is one of the chips, because I am the way that I've found the next step of my recovery of addiction is through a 12-step program. So 12 steps is what AA is. And it was born in America with some Christians that were doing a discipleship group. They were really serious about God, and they really wanted to go on in their character, in their relationship with God. And so they started doing these things. And this one guy said, that's really good, but I want to use that outside the church. I want to use that with people who aren't Christians, and I want to use it with people who are alcoholics. So that's what AA is. So I'm a member of a fellowship of people who come together to support each other with pornography addiction. And I ring people up and ask them, how are you doing? How are you feeling? And we encourage each other, and we say, don't give up. We say, here's the things that we've learned. Here's the things that work. And we encourage each other to pray. So I'm sponsoring a guy who is a staunch atheist, who had horrible experiences with church in his younger days. And he brought the prayer of Thomas Aquinas? The prayer where you say, God, make me a vessel of you. You know, let me be a blessing rather than a... Yeah? He dug out that prayer, and he prayed that with me as part of his step work, but he's an atheist. So this is the beautiful thing about the 12-step program. It's a spiritual program where everybody is welcomed. Everybody understands what it's like to have an addiction. This is why, I know you guys accept me, and I believe that as leaders and Christians, you guys love me, but I don't know whether you guys know what it's really like to have an addiction. But in the 12-step rooms, they actually know what it's like. So it's a powerful place for love and transformation and healing to happen. So another little opportunity of influence is that as soon as I started this job, someone said, oh, well, we have this thing every month, the Cambridgeshire Police Cadets, as part of their training program, they get a day on mental health training, a whole day to learn about mental health. And within that whole day, they get an hour on addiction. And the lady said, do you want to come and do that hour? And I was like, I've just started this job. I have no. I would love to do it, but I'm not ready. So a couple months later, I'd written up an hour-long presentation. And I've now done it about 3 or 4 times. It's brilliant. It's just all these young, fresh-faced cadets with their police uniforms on, sitting there with their pens. And I get to tell them that addiction is not a weakness of character. It's not a failure of morality, that it's a condition, and that there's reasons why addiction happens, and there's things that we can do to help to overcome addiction. So it's absolutely brilliant. The latest, bestest thing I haven't told you, Simon or Julie, about since we talked, is that I met a lady on a first aid course who said, I've got people who I give therapy to who have problems with their sexuality, but once I run out of my slots and I can't give them any more sessions, I don't know what to do with them. And when she heard about the 12-step sex recovery group or the addiction recovery group, she was absolutely fascinated by it. So I spent an hour with her having a cup of tea and telling her all about it. And so now I might be able to go into her workplace and do a training about addiction recovery and about what the 12 steps offer and other alternatives. So that's what I would love to do, even more than helping with alcohol and drugs. I would love to help people with porn addiction, sex addiction, behavioral addiction. And it's all about the kingdom. It's all about accepting people, loving people, believing in people, not giving up on people, seeing our inner worth that we all are born with because of being made in God's image. And that's my time. So I'll stop there.
Kevin, thank you for your vulnerability and sharing your journey and story in that. And he works with the Edge Cafe, and Sunday nights you facilitate groups and being church out in these completely unchurched environments is so powerful. So what does a transformed community look like in each of our contexts? Lord, would you stir this in us? God uses ordinary people. We're here. Amen. Thank you.